move on to the fifth case of the morning, United States against Michael Gardner. I think this guy was, but the other one was not the left side, yes, right. Mr. Handelsman?
Please, the court. Robert Handelsman for the appellant. There are three facts the government uses to justify this conviction: a glove, statements, and flight. None of these, either alone or in conjunction with the others, support this conviction. The problem with the glove, which Gardner had on his left hand when he was arrested.
You left out the gun.
Well, in all the cases we cited in a brief, there was a gun, and there were reversals.
Yeah, but you left out the gun here.
Well, the gun comes last, not first.
I know, but you said there were three things you relied on. I thought I'd throw in the fact that there was a gun floating around someplace.
Okay.
And in fact, in the cases you rely on, the guns are hidden somehow, or not, or in such a situation that the trier of fact wouldn't necessarily be able to infer that the person could exercise dominion and control over the gun, whereas this gun was in the front seat of the car, and the glove was, the other glove, if you will, was there as well, and so the trier of fact could have thought there, that the explanation that it flew forward as the car crashed into the barricade was not a plausible one.
His driver could have had the gun too and just dropped it there when he ran out. The point here...
The jury puts all of those facts together, though. The gun's in the front seat, the matching gloves in the front seat, he's changing his story about the gun. You know, obviously, as you well know, we're not going to look at these things in isolation from one another. We surely have to look at them all together.
Well, first of all, there's no evidence of where the gun was prior to the impact. If there is no impact here, this case may... And the driver didn't run off. This case may have been in a different perspective.
Well, isn't it logical if, you know, if other things aren't dislodged materially from the front of the car, why should the gun have been?
The driver could have just taken it out of his pocket or wherever he had it and dropped it in there and ran off. The point is, we don't know where anything was prior to the impact.
Except we do know that Mr. Gardner, or whatever, says, a.k.a. Mr. Thomas, is the one with the glove on.
All right, he had
with the gun. Now, why would you be wearing a glove on a day that's 60 degrees outside?
Maybe he was just trying it on.
Yes,
at the end of October.
Okay.
The point is, he had the glove on the left hand. There's no evidence whether he was left-handed or right-handed.
Yeah.
So the government's theory is he was wearing a glove so he would avoid leaving fingerprints on the gun. Now, if we don't know if he's left-handed or right-handed, the majority of the population is right-handed. If he's wearing a glove on his left hand...
Maybe he was wearing both hands and he took it off just before the crash. Look at it that way. All sorts of speculation, guessing.
I don't know. Maybe he, especially you can speculate just as easily that he had just the glove.
I swear all these arguments were made to the jury.
Well, you still have to look at this case under recognized principle. Is there any evidence, when looked at in the light most favorable to the prosecution, a jury could find the facts which would justify conviction. Mm-hmm. And I will submit that they're not here.
Okay.
For the reason, in the cases that we cited in the briefs, there was no impact. That car was going at a tremendous rate of speed, even as it turned the corner. The driver could have dropped the gun there. He could have had it under his seat and it flew forward. There is nothing to show that Gardner knew that that gun was there prior to the impact.
Do we know what kind of, what the actual configuration of this car was? Did it have bucket seats or did it have a bench seat in the front? Or?
I don't recall offhand if it had... I think the officer testified, if I'm not mistaken, that he found the glove between the seats. Now, I didn't say anything. There was a console with a floor shift there. I think it was a Buick, a smaller model Buick. I know I drive a similar car, and it doesn't have bucket seats, and it has a column shift. But the thing I'd like you to look at, on this case, is that the language in the cases where there was a reversal, the four or five cases cited in the briefs, you can match that language up with this situation. I would ask you to look seriously at that. Not that that you wouldn't look seriously if I didn't ask you that. But the point is here, if we take the language out of these, any of these cases that are quoted in here.
But what about the exemption? I mean, you know, they all, of course, as you're implying, have to be assessed on the basis of the facts of the particular case. What do we make of Mr. Gardner's inconsistent statements to the law enforcement officials?
He's nervous.
He either knows the gun's in the car or he doesn't. That's not a subtle point.
Well, he never admitted possessing a gun. It's not that he said, I had it one time and he didn't have it the other time.
But he says, I might have touched the gun. And then at another point, he says, I didn't know there was a gun in the car. I mean, those are pretty flat.
But that is still not evidence that he knew it was there. You deal with an uneducated man who's obviously nervous under the circumstances, without counsel. I'm not implying that he had a legal right to counsel at that time. He probably didn't. He obviously didn't. But he's nervous. He knows he's in trouble, and he's just not sure what to do. Now, you know, obviously the jury considers all this. But the point is, there has to be a sufficient amount of evidence that the jury can consider. And you don't have it here. I would submit to you, it wouldn't be much different than somebody walking by a house where a murder is occurring, and he's arrested for it. There's no evidence that anything to do with it, but he was close to it. He had to have known. He had to have participated. The evidence just isn't here, because we don't know what happened prior to that impact. Who had the gun, where it was, and the evidence just isn't there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Holler again.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're saving money for the Northern District of Indiana.
I am. I'm helping them out on that ground. Your Honor, I believe that there's been a lot of speculation and arguments that have been raised in this case, and those arguments, many were and all should have been addressed to the 12 people who sat on the jury in this case. And based on the information that was before them, they could have accepted all of the arguments that defense counsel has raised, and they chose not to, and they chose to convict the defendant. And under the standard of review here, could a reasonable jury have found sufficient evidence to convict the defendant beyond a reasonable doubt, the government would submit that definitely there was.
But after Rawlings, don't we need at least some evidence that really makes it pretty clear that he knows the gun is there, at least?
Well, I think that I agree with that, Your Honor, but I think that there is evidence that he knows that the gun is there. I think his statements are very inconsistent, and they're very clear that he's hiding and concealing something. And I think if we have in those statements, first in the first statement he says he knew the gun was stolen. In the second statement he says he doesn't know the car.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that the car was stolen. In the first statement, first he says he doesn't know the gun was present. Then when they ask him, well, are we going to find your fingerprints on the gun? He says, well, you might, and if so, that would be because the gun flew forward during the accident and I might have touched it. And then later in the second statement again he says he just doesn't know. He didn't know there was a gun in the car, and his fingerprints are not going to be on the gun. So he's giving all of these inconsistent stories, and the jury can therefore choose to reject those statements and say the reason that he's giving those false statements is because he knew there was a gun in the car, and it was his gun that was in the car, and he doesn't want anyone to know it. Now, did they have to accept that conclusion? Of course not. Of course they didn't. And many of these arguments were raised to the jury by defense counsel at trial. But those statements alone, I think, can provide evidence to show that he knows that there is a gun and that he is exercising dominion and control over the gun. There's also the glove evidence in this case. He's wearing a glove. The second glove, I think, both shows that, you know, he's not trying the gloves on. If anything, he's probably taking the gloves off to try and reveal the fact that that's why there are no fingerprints on the gun, is because he had gloves on. You know, the temperature today as I was walking over here was 53 degrees. I didn't see a single person on the street wearing gloves. It was 60 degrees, as was testified to, uncontradicted, on the day of the crash. The defendant's in a car. There's no innocent explanation as to why he should be wearing gloves on that day.
Why he should have cold hands?
That's an argument that again could be for the jury, all right?
You said an innocent explanation. I'll give you one.
That's an innocent explanation, but it's one that could be raised to the jury and could be rejected by the jury. The jury doesn't have to believe that.
I just gave you an innocent explanation.
Well, I'll retract that statement then, Your Honor. There could be an innocent explanation.
Yeah, boy.
99% of the people out there.
I'm at the point when it doesn't make any difference one way or another.
I agree, Your Honor. 99% of the people don't have hands cold enough that they wear gloves when it's 60 degrees outside, and the jury could put him in that pool of people and say the reason that he was wearing the glove is because he was trying to keep fingerprints off of the gun, because he was up to something that was no good, and because he had a gun that he was using in a stolen car and was therefore up to no good. The flight evidence, again, I agree with defense counsel, it's only a factor that can be considered, but it's yet another factor on top of the other evidence here that he's trying to escape, that he's not just a passenger in a car that he doesn't know is stolen. He's trying to conceal something. He's trying to get away from the gun. He's trying to get away from the evidence that may well convict him of a crime. And in contrast to Shira's Seventh Circuit case and the other cases that he's citing, the gun isn't hidden in a compartment where, there would be no evidence, I think, after Rawlings and after Shira's, first and foremost, that he doesn't know that there's a gun present. This isn't the driver's car. This is the car of an 81-year-old woman and was stolen 3 hours earlier. So the inference, when there's a gun lying at the passenger's feet, I think the jury can easily conclude that it's the passenger's gun. And that it's his gun, he has the gloves on, that he's keeping the prints off of it, and he's given statements, all of which are inconsistent and all of which could lead the jury to reasonably conclude that he is a person who possessed this gun. The second argument issue that was raised hasn't really been addressed, but we believe that it is controlled by the Supreme Court case in Scarborough and by numerous decisions that we've cited in the brief to this court, and so unless
he withdrew that issue.
I'm sorry?
Didn't he withdraw that issue?
I don't believe he did. I believe that was the other case, Mr. Reynolds. That, I believe, is still, you know, something that you would consider, but we would just ask you to affirm it on the briefs. If there are no further questions, I would ask you to affirm.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Handelsman, anything more?
I didn't withdraw the second argument, but in light of Scarborough's, I'll rest on the briefs. I think in the Soto case, the Ninth Circuit case, the gun was in the open. Was right behind the defendant's seat. They found a sawed-off shotgun that had the defendant's handprint or fingerprint on it.
But in California, almost anything can happen.
Well, we've seen that it does. So there's one case where the gun was in the open. Inconsistent statements don't prove a fact which one of them doesn't contain. I'll leave it at that. The statements are not probative, the flight isn't probative, and the glove isn't probative. The evidence isn't here. Thank you.
Thank you. And you were appointed, were you not,
Mr.
Henderson?
Yes.
We appreciate very much your efforts on behalf of your client. You have
Thank
our
you.
Thanks. Thank you also, Mr. Hollis. And we will take this case under advisement. The last case of the morning is submitted on the briefs, so the court will stand in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.